Welcome to the Kickstart Garage, where we want to inspire and educate the leaders of tomorrow. Join us as we learn from the best in the business.
Welcome back to the Kickstart Garage podcast. I am your host, Gavin Quigley, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, Sam John Byrne. In partnership with Magnate 100, we are joined by the founder of Arctic Stone Hand Roll Ice Cream, Caelan Cullen. Welcome to the show, Caelan. How's it going?
How's it going, lads? Excited to be here. Thanks, Mel, for letting me chat with you today. Appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to it. So before we jump into what you've done in the entrepreneurship space, let us get a bit of a background on yourself. Were you ice cream mad growing up, or did you have any other big hobbies and interests as a kid?
Yeah, a bit of a background about myself. I've always been a big guy for my food. I'm always kind of looking for the next like best place to go. And I just, one of my favorite things to do, and especially when I'm traveling, is to go out eating, whether it's in the street food markets or some of the local like shops or whatever, or cafes. You know, I tend to kind of look for those little hidden gems. So food has always been a big thing for me, and ice cream as well. I think ice cream is a big thing for everyone when they're growing up. Like, I always remember good moments of having, like, after a football match or some sporting event or whatever, having ice cream afterwards to celebrate, you know. So, you know, in Ireland especially, I think ice cream has this kind of nostalgic vibe. I don't know about yourselves, what you think about that. But I always, you know, it's always a childhood thing is ice cream. Like the Mr. Whippy vans and stuff going around was always a big thing for me growing up, you know. So, I've always been kind of into ice cream myself. And then mainly food has always been a huge passion of mine, you know, so cooking, anything with fresh ingredients, and traveling as well, you know. So kind of whenever I go to a new location, I always go to the street food markets. And then when I was working during college, all my jobs really were, I'd say 95% of my jobs were all in food of some sort, whether it was chefing. And every time I've traveled, I've actually worked as a chef, you know, in places like in New Zealand. So just learning the culinary trade from there as well, you know, so I'm appreciating good food from there, you know, so that's kind of how I got into it and kind of enjoyed food from there.
Yeah, on food itself, I think it's just a great way to become more cultured, but just learn about different types of cuisine. Like I remember my first proper job, like working in, while I was in college, was in Mao, the Asian restaurant. And you end up becoming really good friends with these like Thai and Chinese guys, and they're teaching you how to cook these dishes, and you just learn so much. And on what you were saying as well about, you know, food, you just, and ice cream in particular, you associate it with different memories with mates, and it really builds, it's great for kind of social events, I suppose. So I think everyone can relate to that. Caelan, I noticed as well from my research prior to today's podcast that you were a fellow UCD head like myself and actually studied HR management services, I believe. Tell us a few questions, I suppose, here. Like, what was your time in UCD like? I mean, would you recommend that course to anyone listening? And do you have anything in particular that you remember or that, you know, you regret about that time in education?
Yeah, so I'm actually, would you believe, I'm wearing a UCD AFC top right now from my time playing for UCD, which is funny you asked that question. Yeah, I literally put it on there about 20 minutes ago. So it's funny you asked that. Like, I really, really enjoyed college, and I really enjoyed UCD. And probably the main reason was because I played for UCD, the soccer team, and we won a good bit, and I was named University's Player of the Year as well. So that was a good way to end going to UCD. You know, it was a very special moment. So I had some great memories and some not so great memories on the sports fields there, you know, but they kind of make you, I think, the whole experience better. But so what I studied, I actually studied a bit of HR as well, but my degree is in social science and mainly with social work and social policy. And I really enjoyed it. I look back on it now and wish I had actually delved more into social policy and a bit of sociology as well, more, and gotten more involved into it, because I actually find it fascinating now. As you get older, you kind of see how those policies do like impact people's lives, whether socioeconomically or just in the healthcare system, or even how sociology impacts the way people view the world as well. So the basically, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, but I would have enjoyed it a lot more knowing what I know now, because I can actually see those policies taking place as you get older. You know what I mean? And then, yeah, so I really enjoyed it. And I would recommend what I did to people if they're getting into HR. A lot of people went down the HR route after they were done in social science, but I went down the ice cream route. So that was a bit of a different one. But so I really enjoyed it. Would recommend if you're good with people and you kind of want to necessarily work with people and help them in some regard, then social science, social work, HR is the way to go. I would recommend anyway. But I don't have any regrets. Maybe the only regret maybe is not joining as many sports teams and giving it as much in other aspects. I wasn't much of a partier or anything like that, so I was kind of mainly focused on sports and playing for UCD. So that was kind of my main goal, was to do as well as I could with UCD and obviously graduate as well. So, but no, I loved UCD and I still go back there the odd time. It's got a place in my heart now. And as I said, I'm still repping the brand and the logo and the university on my chest, you know. So I really enjoyed it personally.
You mentioned there prior to that last question that you went around visiting various food markets, and I recently tried Arctic Stone ice cream down at a Dunleary food market, and I just want to say it's proper quality ice cream. It's really, really good. And I mean, it's been like, I've seen from your website, it's been ranked Ireland's best ice cream. And I'm sure Teddy's fans down in Dunleary are fuming right now. But if you're at the food market on a Sunday, I definitely recommend that you pick one up. With that said, I suppose my first question is, where did you come up with the idea for hand-rolled ice cream?
Yeah, so it's a Southeast Asian technique, very popular in the street food markets of Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Vietnam as well, and Taiwan. So when I was traveling, once I finished college, I went traveling around Southeast Asia for 2-3 months. And on my first night there, we went to a street food market. Everyone's like, oh, we're going to piss, we'll go get drinks. I was like, nah, I'm going to the street food markets. I want to see what the infamous Asian street food markets are like. And they did not disappoint. There was fire, there was flair, there was everything you wanted in street food. And it was just a spectacular like place to be. And like I've been working in street food markets and startups during college as like a chef and stuff like that in People's Park as well. So I actually used to work in one of the stalls in People's Park. So I know what it's like to work there, you know. So when I set up the stall there, I kind of had an idea. But so I had done all the festivals, working with a startup as well. So again, street food, I love it. So when I came across the concept of rolled ice cream, again, I'd never seen anything like that before. The theater and the guys just giving it socks, really enjoying it, having a great time with the customers. I was like, this is really cool. But then when I tried it, I was like, it doesn't taste very good, to be honest with you. But the technique and the show is awesome. And the aesthetics of the whole process is awesome. Really, really cool. That's something I'd never seen before. So I actually stayed there in Chiang Mai a bit longer to learn with the guys how to do it. And I'm 6'4", so like standing beside these guys and Ginger, so like the contrast was hilarious, just taking pictures of me making ice cream with these lads in the street food markets. And everyone else went off and I stayed on to learn how to do it. And I was like, this is really cool. I'm going to see if I can turn this into an idea of some sort. And I've always been kind of like that, and either like selling stuff in school, like protein powder or tickets or something like that. And same in throughout college. And like a bit of an entrepreneurial flair, I suppose, but nothing with an actual structured business. And I was like, this could be really cool. I learned how to do it in the street food markets. And then for the rest of the trip, I was there again for like, I don't know, I think it was 8-9 weeks I was traveling. And I just cut every day. I was sitting down, I either go to a Starbucks or some coffee shop or whatever in Southeast Asia for like a couple of minutes or like half an hour, just thinking of ideas and flavors and writing it all down on my phone, going to different locations. And I could not stop thinking about it for the whole trip. So I burned the ear off a lot of people. I was like, look, lads, ice cream, it's going to be great. And they're like, yeah, go on. And I was like, yeah. So then when I came home, again, I was so obsessed with the idea. I started, and I've been in the food industry. I got in touch with a few people I knew, started developing recipes and blends. I knew the technique was there and it was awesome and I knew how to do it. But again, we needed to make the quality of ice cream, as you said, like top grade, as good as we physically could make it. Because for me, as great as the aesthetics looks and the theater is fantastic, people, like, you can't get someone to buy something twice unless they really, really enjoy the experience and the taste and the quality. So like, you can always sell something to someone once, but you can't do it twice if they don't enjoy it. So we had to back up the really cool technique with the best quality ingredients. And that's what I wanted to do and combine the two and not just, so like, let's say you do a blind taste test, it still passes the test and everyone loves it because, yeah, they didn't view the show, but they enjoyed the actual quality product. And that's what I wanted to do from day one, you know? So give them the all round experience from taste, quality and visual perception and everything. So yeah, and then came home and started saving and working in bars and restaurants from, geez, I was doing about 15, 16 hour shifts a day for every day for months up from August till April when I was 22, just saving up money as much as I could and putting it all back into the business and developing logos and branding and working with chefs, developing recipes, developing vegan recipes as well to kind of create the best quality product. And yeah, and then launched in May 2016. So in a small market stall. So it kind of came full circle. I learned how to do it in a market stall in Thailand, in the street food markets, and then set up a market stall. And I still do the market stalls, like you said, in Dunleary, you know, and it's, Dunleary is a very hard place to sell ice cream because you have some great brands there, like you mentioned already, Teddy's and Scrumdiddlys is there, and it's a competitive, competitive industry. But for us to make a dent in that is testament to what the idea of what we wanted to do with the proper quality ice cream as well and a visual sensation as well, you know?
That's an incredible story. And sorry, this has popped into my head. Do you ever wonder, if you hadn't taken that trip, what business you would have started now, if at all?
I think like I've always had it. Entrepreneurialism is kind of in my family as well. Like my mother owned a creche and stuff like that. So like, it's all, we've always kind of worked for ourselves. And yeah, so like, I think it is there that I would have eventually come up with an idea. Cause I've had this book since I was like 15, 16 of every idea I've ever thought of written down. Now I can't actually find it at the moment, but like over the years I've written hundreds of ideas of businesses and stuff. So it's always there. But if I hadn't have come across the rolled ice cream, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have gotten into it, but necessarily, but I was so captivated by it and I'd never seen it before. I was like, right, I want to do something different. I don't want to just scoop it. I don't want to just do pee Mr. Whippy with a soft serve. You know, I want to create an idea and bring it back. And that's why I always encourage when people say, oh, I think about traveling. I'm just like, do it. But what about, no, just do it. You know what I mean? Just go traveling. The amount of ideas like you'll come across when you're traveling, even just walking the streets of anywhere, just inspires so many ideas. And I've come back from multiple holidays with such great ideas. Obviously, some of them I haven't followed through with, obviously, but like that's when your like imagination goes wild for me anyway. So I would have, I can imagine I would have started something and it would have been in food because I was starting with literally no money at all. Like on my first day, I remember when I set up the market stall, I had less than 50 euro left in my account. And at that time I was going through a bit of issues with living and stuff, and I was living on couches and my clothes were in like black bags and stuff like that. I was moving from couch to couch for a couple of months, so it was quite tough. So I wanted to start a business where it wasn't cash heavy. The barriers for entry weren't that low necessarily. You know, I'd already been in the street food markets before, so I had experience. I kind of knew how market stalls and running a festival set up for food and how that works. And yeah, so just from past experience of working there, and I was never going to get into IT or tech because that's not me. I'm illiterate. I can barely work a computer, you know what I mean? I can't get the camera to work on this thing, like, so like I'm awful. I can barely answer a phone, like, shocking. And yeah, so like I'm never going to get into IT. I say that now, but who knows? But food is always, it's in my top three passions in life. I have my top three passions in life circled and I know them as well. And I'm going to follow through with them. And food is number two for me. And I just always going to be in food of some sort. I just love it because you have families coming down to Arctic Stone on a bad day, let's say, and they walk away smiling. You know, for me, that's what it's all about. So I know what food can do for people. You ever heard the word hangry? You know, people are pissed off and they're having a bad day. And sometimes you just give them some food and, you know, the world seems a lot less troubled, you know, and that's what I kind of wanted to do, is give people that experience of making them feel a bit better, you know, not just give them something, but an experience as well. Like I have people that come down to the shop on their first date, you know what I mean? Specifically to the ice cream shop on their first date. Cause it's like, you know, some people just don't want to drink or whatever, which is cool. And they're still going out to this day, which is awesome. You know what I mean? So we were part of their story. So going back to the question, I would have always gotten into food of some sort, created a product. I've always been into, like, massively into food. And ice cream is a very, very hard industry. It's not for the faint-hearted, I'm not gonna lie, because during the winter, what do? You know, you still have to sell in the snow, the rain, the wind, and we have sold in literally, like, storms. Like in People's Park, man, you said you were there, and sometimes there was about, probably, what was there, about 20 stalls there? When were you, about 2-3 weeks ago when you were there? About 20 stalls?
Yeah, it would have been around that, yeah.
Yeah, so some days we've shown up in December, and there'll be like 2 stalls there because the weather is so bad. People are like, what are you doing setting up an ice cream stall? I was like, if I make one sale, I'm happy out, you know, because we've just had an influence on someone's day, you know, and we have. We've never got a day where we haven't sold, even literally in the worst possible conditions you can imagine, where you're holding the tent in a storm, in a gale force storm, snow is coming in, everything's breaking. And, you know, so that's what food can do. And if you can influence someone's day, because you can see the direct results from food as well. It's a very interpersonal thing. So I would have gotten eventually into it of some sort. Maybe not ice cream necessarily, if you had told me 5-6 years ago. But, you know, I would have gotten into food at some stage. No doubt. No doubt that would have been my first business. And it's a good thing. It's a good way to learn the industries as well and kind of spark the entrepreneurial flair is food as well. But it's got such a high failure rate as well, because, you know, food is perceptual as well. You know, it's not necessarily got a straight up function. Like, so not everyone's going to like my ice cream. Some people might not like it at all, but some people might think it's good. You can't appease everyone when it comes to food, unfortunately, you know. But yeah, so that's kind of why I got into food, you know.
Yeah, you've a great story. I love hearing you talking about it as well. You can feel the passion. You can feel the passion. You'll have to find that book you referenced a couple of minutes ago as well, with all the ideas you've had since you were a teenager, because imagine what that would look like in a couple of decades. Like, it'd be mental.
Oh, like some of the ideas I've looked back on, like some were like sustainable farms, and just thinking off the top of my head and like, oh, just mad ideas. But it's all probably in my family home, and I'm probably in the attic covered in dust somewhere. I'll go through the annals one day, but I still do that. I still, whenever I have an idea or I go traveling, I keep a note open. I would encourage anyone listening to this podcast, anyone at all, if you're ever traveling and you have an idea, write it down. Don't stop talking to the person you're talking, and you see something cool, just write it down in your notes, and then you'll come back to it and you could evolve it into something. And if it doesn't come to anything, it doesn't come to anything. But you've just sparked that kind of creativity. And it's like, what about this? What about this? And the more you use that side of your brain, the better it gets at identifying niches and kind of target markets and just getting the entrepreneurial flair. And it's a lot of fun as well, you know?
Yeah, it's mad to think the inception of so many cool businesses probably started in the notes section on a mobile phone and just flared from there. And, you know, a lot of people are actually terrified of entrepreneurship. I mean, I'll be honest, you're making it sound very exciting, but there are folks out there with like all the business acumen and some really great ideas, but they're just risk averse people. And so they never take the plunge. Are you a guy who is up at the crack of dawn, putting in 80 hours a week, or like, would you operate your business within a normal kind of like 9-to-5 time frame that people would be used to?
For that question, okay, so I would actually say I'm probably the worst of that type of style of entrepreneur. I'm not like getting up at 5 a.m. Like, I can barely get up out of bed before 8:30. Like, I set 5-6 alarms and they're all going off at the same time. I just like lie there. You know, if I need to be somewhere, I'll be somewhere. And if I need to be somewhere at 6:30 in the morning, I'll be there. But if I don't, like, I set up my targets for the day that I need to get done, the goals, the tasks. I lay out my day before, like, that night and just write down every task. And if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done. Like, I'm not going to, like, no one's going to get hurt or no one's going to die if I don't get it done. You know what I mean? So it's on my own time. So 9-to-5 is just not me. Like, I could probably be working, getting stuff done and sending emails at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't really turn off. So, like, you know, you could be anywhere, like you could be sitting in a cafe answering calls and emails, you know what I mean? So it's not necessarily that I'm hustling from 5 a.m. or I have this mad structure. I'm literally neither. So yeah, it's kind of like I'll get my tasks done. I lay out everything that I need to get done. And if it gets done, it gets done. And if it doesn't, I'll get it done tomorrow. Like I get one of the priorities that need to be done, done. And that's something that I'm quite good at, is getting the task done. But again, like I feel like you see a lot of the stuff like Gary Vee and stuff like that, get up at five and hustle and grind. I just don't like that style personally. Like I don't think I could be outworked because I have a very high work rate. Like I'll work till five. I'll work all night if I need to get something done. But if I get it done early, I'll go home and just sit and get emails done and get little bits here and there done and not put too much pressure on myself. You know what I mean? So I tend to not, because I enjoy it so much that it's not stress. I just want to get the task done and just enjoy it. You know what I mean? So when you start getting stressed, that's when you start getting anxious, and I want to try and avoid that as much as possible. But when it comes to the other question of the fear of entrepreneurship, I think like when I started, I didn't start with a whole lot. So I didn't have a whole lot to lose when I started. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. Just go do it and see what happens. And if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. Like people fail the whole time. Like you can fail at things you hate. Like I've failed math. I hate maths. I hate financials. I hate all that kind of stuff. It just doesn't fit in my brain. I can't figure it out and I hate it. And I've failed at it multiple times. Like I didn't do too well in school, but you know, like, so you can fail at anything. So you might as well just like fail at something you enjoy. So I was like, right, I know I'm going to enjoy selling ice cream. I know I'm going to enjoy giving something to someone that people enjoy and like getting reactions from people and creating things. So if I get it wrong, I get it wrong. So I think people put a lot of pressure on themselves that they have to be this like superstar and you can't get it wrong. And if I fail, what are people going to think? I genuinely couldn't care what people would think of me if I get it wrong. Or if I fail, like I failed in the 6 years I've been doing ice cream, I failed at a lot of stuff. I've got a lot of stuff wrong, more so than I've probably gotten right. But we're still here 6 years later, and like now we're stocked in a few places and stuff. So you will get things wrong. And if you don't get it wrong, like you're just lying because you didn't try. Like if you don't try something, you know, it would have been a regret for me if I didn't try it. You know what I mean? So you will get it wrong. You will fail, but just enjoy it because it's about the journey and how you get back. You know what I mean? So everyone's going to fail. And if you don't fail, you must be like, I don't know, Jeff Bezos or something like that, a super genius. Because like, I don't know, like I've failed so many times, but I actually enjoy it because when I'm at my best is when things are in utter chaos, because I stay calm, because I've gotten used to that feeling of when things are going to shit and everything is in chaos and things are going wrong and staff aren't showing up and you just stay calm and your back's against the wall. And that's when I feel when I'm at my best. And people are like, how did you get that done? I was like, I don't really know. I just stayed calm through it. And they were like, but everything went wrong. I was like, yeah, well, look, these things happen. You know, if I told you some of the stories that have happened over the years, you probably wouldn't believe me because it's extraordinary. Some of the, you just have to look and you just have to laugh like, ha. Jesus, if I didn't laugh, I'd cry right now. But you just kind of have to get on with it. You know what I mean? And if you, I would encourage anyone that's listening to this again, that I know it's very cliched and stuff like that, but when it comes to failure, just enjoy it. Just embrace it, because like it gives you courage to go on to do something else, because you've already got it wrong once. So you might as well go forward and try it again. You know what I mean? Just do it better. You know what I mean? And that's the plan for myself is, if I get it all wrong and I go bankrupt tomorrow, I know I can do it again because I've done it once. You know, I can just build on that experience, because like if you don't try in life, you'll never fail, which is great, which is safe, but you'll never go on. For me anyway, you'll never go on to live your full potential if you don't try. And like by failing, you learn a lot more than just winning. Like I'm sure Ronaldo has missed more shots than he has scored. You know what I mean? Like Michael Jordan has that famous saying that he's like, it's like, how did you get that? Or whatever, like when he like... he missed 1,000 shots before he got that one. Do you get what I mean? So like you have to learn over time. And I know that from football, when I'm at my best, when I was playing is actually when I was at my worst. And I had to learn. It's like, okay, what did I do wrong in this game? And like, you have to criticize yourself as well, but not to be too harsh, but you have to learn from what you did wrong, you know, and just get better the next time. And that's how I see business as well. And like, you can take the safe bet, you can be secure and conservative, and that's fine if that suits well with you. But to live, for me, your full potential, you have to be willing to risk it all and fail. And the thing is, I didn't start with a whole lot. So like, you know, I wasn't going to lose a whole lot. If I do, I'll start from scratch again. You know what I mean? So just enjoy it. And if you fail, you get it wrong, who cares? You did something that 95% of people in this world haven't even tried. You know what I mean? So you can always pat yourself on the back and, you know, you can go down smiling, saying, at least I tried. You know what I mean? And that's the way I view it. And if I get it wrong, I get it wrong. I probably will get it wrong. I've got a lot wrong. So like, we're still going. We're still rocking and rolling. You know what I mean? So yeah. So like, at least you go down into the ground or whatever, and you can just say, at least I tried. And you can go down with a smile because, you know, you did something that not a whole lot of people have done, you know? That's the way
I view like failure. That, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across. It's a bit like that the Henry Ford quote, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and who's to say you're right or wrong, or you're a failure or you're a success? And that's people like, how do you become a success? It's like, I don't know. How do you become a success? Like, I can't tell you guys how to be a success in your business because you're the only one. I can't tell you that you're a failure because your definition of a failure will be something else. And you're not a failure unless you stop. I think if you get it wrong and you fail and you stop and you just blow up and you just give up, that's when I think you've hit failure. But if you get up, because like, giants fall, but people get back up off their feet, you know, the whole time. So that's the way I view it.
Yeah. Just jumping back here now. Recently, I just want to tell a bit of a story here before I ask this kind of question. But recently, a little coffee trailer opened up down the road from me, and it was open and closed within the space of 6 months. And I'd say it was because of the because of the opposition from locals. It wasn't a doubt about it. And it was terrible to see because it really wasn't imposing on anybody. You know, a few locals just didn't like it, and I mean, they vandalized the trailer. They threw crap in the generators. They spray painted over the fences, glued the whole thing shut, and I mean, it was just proper nasty stuff. So, you know, when opening a stall, location is key, I'd say. So for someone looking to open a stall, what technical and feasibility questions should they be asking themselves before going ahead with it?
Yeah, so I get a lot of people asking me this question, actually a good bit, that are setting up like food ideas and food trucks and coffee trailers and all sorts. Like, they've asked me, and, you know, you have to get your ducks in a row in that regard, because again, going back to the last question, I set up a Savage food truck and trailer in a location that I ended up getting screwed over in because I didn't have the planning. And a lot of these food trucks and stuff like that, you just need to make sure you can sell from that location, and make sure it's in writing, that it's not just a hearsay that someone has said that you can sell there, that's no bother. Make sure it's in writing that you know that you can actually sell something, because you don't want a letter from the local council or the neighbors or the locals in general vandalizing it because you can't physically sell there. Like that crowd you were talking about, you know what I mean? So if you can sell there, then you can. So that would be something I'd look at if anyone is setting up a food truck or trailer, to make sure that all the bureaucratic stuff is taken care of. So like, when it comes to logistical, and like, yeah, it is very difficult to find locations and stuff like that if you don't own the land or car parks and stuff like that. Again, you may not be able to sell it because Ireland is very strict on the licensing. So like, you know, in the States, I don't know if you lads have been there, one of my favorite things to do is go to like the food trucks, you know, and so yeah, the food, sorry, someone just knocked on the window there. Yeah, the food trucks that are just lined the streets and stuff. And yeah, so like, they can just park up wherever they want and start selling, but in Ireland you can't, which is a bit different. So our licensing is very strict here. So just for them, setting up a food truck or trailer, just make sure you have everything that you're able to sell there, because you don't want to set up this really cool food truck, get this really cool concept, and just be told, no, you have to go, you know, and then you just lost a lot of money and whatnot, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. There's quite a uniqueness to your product in the fact that it's hand rolled, and I haven't seen any other ice cream company here anyway using that technique. And it's a really nice personal touch, and like you said, it's theater. It is like, when I went and got it, it is theater. It's really nice. But I seen you recently made the jump to bring the product to shelf in Dunnes and other participating retailers, and congrats, by the way. How have you managed that transition whilst keeping that uniqueness?
So going back to what I said from day one, I always wanted, again, the excitement, the experience, and give the customers something that they really, really enjoyed, but also to walk away with a really good quality product. So when it comes to it, I'm a foodie. Like, I love food. I love the experience of what food can do. So I wanted to create a product that was really good. So during COVID, all the festivals and food markets and stuff like that got closed down. I'm still getting massive like demand for our products. I was like, look guys, I don't really have a way to do this. And I was like, right, well, I'll put it in a Tupperware container and see how it holds and see what people think. And it just kind of blew up from there. And so in 2019, I won Young Entrepreneur of the Year because I brought my line of tubs that I wanted to bring out. And I kind of put that on the back burner. And I was like, right, why don't we just go for this now? And because there's obviously a demand for it. And then it's just kind of, because I know the quality of the product that we use and that we do, so it sustains in the freezers and stuff. So it was like, okay, so our product speaks volumes there. So we just start giving it out to as many people, delivering it. So during lockdown one, I was driving literally all over. I put thousands of kilometers on my car in the last year, just driving out to people's houses, dropping off ice cream because everyone is in lockdown. So like people needed some excitement. So someone would drop me a text or an Instagram message, be like, oh, can you drop ice cream out to my house in Blanchardstown or to my mother's? I haven't seen her in 2-3 months. It's like, I'm on it. Don't worry about it. So I was just going mad, just literally filling up the car full of ice cream. I was getting texts like Blanchardstown, Tala, me, like fucking Dunshaughlin, any like Scaries. And I was like, yeah, no bother. Look, I've nothing else to do. I'm in lockdown too, but I can deliver you a bit of ice cream as well if needs be. So I literally just I was driving through the night, like, look, I won't get to you till like 1 a.m. They were like, yeah, that's fine. I'm like, okay, grand. You know, so I was like, so that was how we transitioned into it. And I was like, right, the demand is there. Like I said at the start, if we could do 2 to 3 orders a day, maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just to give myself during lockdown, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, to give something to do, you know, because the shop was completely closed for 3-4 months. And I was like, and then we were fulfilling like 20, 25 orders that I had to get another staff member to help me in to package it and everything. And it just really took off from there. I was like, right, well, I have something here, so let's rock and roll with it. So we already had the business model, which was the rolled ice cream, private events, market stalls, which I've done for years. And then the jump from that to the retail side, but I've always wanted to be in retail. Like I would go into the supermarkets the whole time and just look at products on the shelf and just kind of like, okay, that's really cool. I like their niche. I like this. I would just take products off the shelf that I saw new. I would always buy something that I see is new to the store. I always buy it to try it out, try the product, try the packaging, everything like that, and just kind of get a feel for it. And then just, yeah, and just kind of go from, because retail has always fascinated me. Like, why does one person buy this and not the other? What benefits is this going to have over this ice cream? Why Ben and Jerry's over us? All this kind of stuff. So I've always been fascinated by that. Because I think it's like 0.18 of a second the customer has to pick what they want. You know yourselves, you're scanning the aisle so fast. Your eyes are moving like light speed. Like, what am I going to get? Bang. You know what I mean? Unless you're loyal to that product. So that jump, it's a scary jump. But I was like, you know what? If I don't go for it now, I'll never go for it. But and to land in freezers in the likes of Dunn Stores, Lots & Co., Barnhill, all these base pizza, all these places that have had Ben & Jerry's, all the giants of the game, like that have the brand loyal to an extent cult following, and to even make a dent in their sales a small bit is just, for me, is just awesome, you know, and really the years of work we've been putting in and the branding and stuff like that, and what we kind of want to resonate to our customers, that what we want to do either socially or environmentally or innovation wise or quality and taste, it all backed up by what we have in the retail. Because everything we've been doing in the market stall for the years has been backed up that someone buys it on the shelf. Do you get what I mean? And the fact that I was standing in Dunn Stores there the other day and I was just watching some like 17, 18 year old walked up to the freezer. I was like scanning the freezer and took a tub of ours. I was like, yes, you know what I mean? That's what it's all about. Like, why did she pick us? But that was 5-6 years of designing the idea and concept. And I have these 5 pillars that I wrap the business around: is taste, quality, innovation, customer service, and so good social impact. And those 5 elements is why she plucked it off the shelf. And I was like, that's awesome, you know what I mean? So it does transcend to the customers what we're trying to do and what we want to do, you know. So it is a scary jump, going back to the question, and it's a lot of fun. It's just a competitive, tough market to crack. And I'm not saying we've cracked it in any way, shape, or form, but we've slightly put a little dint in it, in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, ice cream is a very competitive market to be in. I mean, you know, suppliers have bargaining power, consumers have bargaining power, there's low barriers to entry, and the list goes on. Yeah, you know, like you said, you seem to be striving in the face of that. So I was wondering, could you give us, like, what was your biggest struggle since starting the business, and how did you overcome that?
The biggest struggle, that moment when I set up the food truck and trailer is probably up there with one of my biggest regrets, because, like, I'm still paying for it to this day, but I've lived from that experience that, you know, enjoy the people that you work for, trust your gut about experiences and stuff like that. So whoever you work with, trust your gut. But that would be my biggest kind of tip to anyone is, oh, if you have a feeling about someone, something, some location, it's probably true. Don't let your head, like, and the whole concept of monetary gain outweigh your primordial instinct, let's say, because of, you know there's something up here, but trust your gut is basically what I'm saying with that. But the biggest struggle, I think, for me, probably cash flow would be a big one. Like, I'm, again, financially inept. I have no concept really of finances at all. So it's quite difficult for me to wrap my head around it sometimes. And again, starting from, I was cycling to meetings, I didn't drive. And again, I was staying on friends' couches, and I was hot, like, whenever I got a shipment of delivery of boxes and tubs, I had to hide them in fields because I had nowhere to store them. And, you know, so that was quite difficult at the very start, to just even pluck up the kind of motivation to just keep going and keep driving. Again, I couldn't even drive at the time as well, but now I can. But, you know, I didn't have a car or anything at the start, so I needed to keep pushing myself to say, it's like, okay, if I keep working at this, I come up with a plan, this is how it's going to unfold, and if I get it wrong, I get it wrong, I can try something else. So that's the early days for me was the hardest moment, because it was personal issues and cash flow issues as well. I didn't have a loan. I couldn't get out a loan because obviously the bank wouldn't. I had no concept really, you know, because until you hit the market stalls, and then just setting it up and saving up all my money. And, you know, that would have been the biggest struggle from now on. But, like, again, like, anything that comes across my path now, I know what it's like to be, like, scraping pennies at the very bottom. So I know, like, and again, for any entrepreneur that's going through a struggle of a moment, those moments do pass, and you're gonna just have an unwavering amount of self-belief, not ego or arrogance, but more, and humbleness to an extent, but more like self-belief that anything, that moment will pass. And that would be the biggest struggle for me. Like, yes, there's been awful moments where things have blown up. I've been electrocuted to the point where I got blown back about 5 feet, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, a lot of stuff, I've knocked out my tooth, like, in work, and by hitting it off something, and I've hurt my hands and all sorts, you know what I mean? I've put my back out. So those are the struggles, those are the short-term struggles. So I know that when you're at the bottom, that, like, when you go through something, you can get through it if you just have perseverance, self-belief, and you really just use that intrinsic motivation more than anything, that you can aspire to be a lot better. So anyone that's listening to this, if you're going through a struggle, going through a hard time, it does pass, but you need to have a lot of self-belief in yourself to make sure that you do get through it. Because if you don't have that self-belief that you can get through it, it will fall apart and things will just get worse and worse. I've noticed that myself, when I've stopped in my self-belief and things get bad, things get worse, because you stop acting on it, let's say, and trying to work to make it better, because, you know, your self-belief is gone. But then once you pluck up that to get back, that's when things start to come a bit better. Do you get what I mean? So it's not necessarily the, because everything, especially in the food industry, things go wrong the whole time. As I said, things blow up, people don't show up, machines will break on your busiest ever day, you'll be catering for 14 to 2,000 people at a private event and your staff don't show up, or, you know, you've run out of stock and you look like an absolute mug. But, you know, so these things do happen, and that's the beauty of running the business. You just kind of take each hit, let's say, and just learn from it and grow and just push forward with it, you know?
Yeah, well said. You'll have to tell us off camera or later about the story about being electrocuted. It certainly sounds like there's been some ups and downs, you know.
No, I was pretending to be an electrician, and I was doing a plug, and I've stuck my finger in the plug, and I said to the guy, don't put the plug in. He was like, put the plug in. I was like, no. And he puts
it in,
and my finger was still up, and I just went flying back, and I was like, oh, it's awful, but yeah. No, some crack. Would not recommend.
You learn the hard way.
Learn the hard way. Don't stick your finger into a live wire. You know.
So. Yeah, yeah. Caelan, I noticed as well in, I believe it was June of this year, you received a certification in sustainable business strategy from Harvard's online business school, and you kind of launched your business off of the back of this. Tell us, is sustainability like at the core of how you plan the operations of both of your businesses?
Yeah, so as I said, I mentioned the five principles of Arctic Stone, and that's actually those are the five principles any business that I ever start is going to be wrapped around. And the main thing, again, doing social work, I've always wanted to do social work. Now, I didn't actually go into it properly myself, but that was my main degree. You know, I've always wanted to help people, be part of people's lives, and kind of give them moments where they can get out of hard times. And so social impact has always been a big thing for me. So whether, again, going back to the new business, Edible Cutlery Ireland, it's the social impact you have and the environmental impact wrapped in one. So when it comes to Arctic Stone, I wanted to make it a plastic-free business, because what I noticed 5-6 years ago, the amount of plastic spoons and everything, all the ice cream shops and stuff were going through. I was like, right, well, what our niche is going to be, and no, it's not a niche now, but 6 years ago, I saw it was obscene, the amount of plastic that we're going through. And I learned about the different grades of plastic and everything like that, you know. And I wanted to make sure Arctic Stone was a plastic-free business with the packaging we give out. So that was the first thing. And it just kind of snowballed from there, you know, either giving back to charitable causes, going into hospitals, giving ice cream out to places like Laura Lynn or schools. And then during, again, COVID number two, the lockdown number two, for 6 weeks every Wednesday, I filled up the car with ice cream, and just if someone sent me a message on Instagram, but like they had to want to cheer someone up, whether it's a boyfriend or someone who's sick or had COVID or something, I would deliver them ice cream anywhere for free in Dublin, just, you know, to give them that moment and have a good social impact. So that's what I wanted to do. And this, the new business, is a sustainable business with Edible Cutlery. So every business that I want, social impact is the number one priority. I don't care if I get it wrong, if I lose all my money, but we've had we've made people smile, or we've made their lives better, we've had a better impact on the environment, or we've stood for something. Because if you don't stand for something, you fall for everything, you know what I mean? So like, if when it comes to edible cutlery and linking it in with sustainability, it's not just going to be about the plastic free element, it's also going to be about like cleaning up local beaches, which is going to give our communities a better vibe and a better sense of community, and just bringing a better sense of society to wherever we land. And that's what I do with Arctic Stone. Is we have our biodiversity projects where we planted hundreds of trees, which I'm big into my environment and biodiversity. I think it's fascinating. Again, it's in my top three of what I'm most passionate about, is the environment and nature. So that's what I do with Arctic Stone. We have the biodiversity projects of rewilding native wildlife of the salmon population as well at the moment, which I'm funding. So bringing salmon stock back to what it was like 20 years ago. And we've you can go on YouTube and see all the, like, our fish that we've been filming and kind of increasing the spawn and everything. It's fascinating stuff. But again, that was the social impact of Arctic Stone. I don't just want it to be an ice cream brand. I want it to have an impact on our local community. So whatever we land, let's say it's in Cork, we're going to influence people in Cork. Whether it's, let's say we go global and we get it into France, it's going to directly impact the people in France. I don't know how, but it will, in the way of community, society, beach cleans, whatever it is, you know, leave the world in a better place. And that's what Edible Cutlery is as well. And that's why I wanted to do the Sustainable Business Strategies certificate, was because you can do these elements of society and whatnot, but if you can bring a bit of business acumen to it and really, really go for it, that's what Edible Cutlery is about, by building a business around what is, for me, is one of the world's biggest problems, which is the plastic pollution. There's nowhere in the world that hasn't been destroyed by plastic just yet. You can go into a forest and the most beautiful landscape in the world, it could be a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke there, you know what I mean? So like, for me anyway, it's one of the world's biggest issues. So that's why I wanted to learn as much, especially during lockdown number three. I was like, right, I spent more on education in the last 6 months than I have like in certificates and diplomas and all this kind of stuff and online learning than I have in since I finished college. And I'm not a good student at all, but I was like, right, I want to learn as much about sustainability because it is the future. And unfortunately, a lot of companies use it as a buzzword, which really annoys me. It's kind of greenwashing kind of scenario. But I want to actually show that it can be done. So that's why with edible cutlery, not only is it plastic free, but we're planting trees across the world with Plantier, which plants trees from India to Haiti to America, Ireland, England, wherever we land. And then we do beach cleans. We're part of Eco Impact Collective, which does beach cleans and ocean cleans in Haiti, Indonesia, India. So we fund this kind of stuff. It's not about just the spoons for me. It's more about building better businesses and building a better society, true businesses that show that can't be all take, take, take. You know what I mean? For me anyway, you know, and that's the way. And if I get it wrong, that's on me. I'd rather go out saying that I tried to do something good rather than just having a business that I went and made €1 million off. It's not for me. It's not what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. Caelan, I mean, there's a lot of like virtue signaling out there. I'm sure you're well aware of it, but I think what you're doing is it's really admirable. And like, there's a million more questions we could ask you. And, you know, I know what you're doing now with edible cutlery is really exciting. We'll have to just have you back a few years down the line. Because we'll have a lot more questions then. But I think, you know, we'll wrap it up there. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You're an absolute legend. Really appreciate you sitting down and taking the time to speak to us this evening. Definitely recommend people go out and try Arctic Stone and edible cutlery, of course. But for those who want to find out a little bit more about you and your businesses, where should they go?
So yeah, so for myself, you can either add me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, I have no worries with that, which is just KaelonC93 or Caelan Cullen, whichever. And then with Arctic Stone, you can follow our journey on Arctic Stone Ice Cream on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you're on, and then and TikTok as well, still figuring out that one. And then Edible Cutlery is just Instagram and Facebook for now. So yeah, no, we're really trying to go for it now, lad. So I really appreciate the kind words and thanks, Mill, for having me on. It's been awesome to chat with you.
Yeah, pleasure's been ours. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. We will catch you in the next one. And Caelan, thanks again for coming on.
Cheers, lads. Have a good one. Thanks, Mill.
Thanks for listening to the Kickstart Garage. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. No one on the show has provided investment advice. The information provided by the Kickstart Garage podcast should not be construed as investment advice. The opinions and views expressed on the Kickstart Garage podcast or those of the participants do not reflect those of the host or sponsors. The Kickstart Garage, its producers, sponsors, hosts, and guests shall not be liable for losses resulting from the investment decisions based upon the opinions or viewpoints presented on the Kickstart Garage.